And now for reading and writing and radio.
Wherever I am, there's always Pooh. There's always Pooh and me. Whatever I do, he wants to do. Where are you going today, says Pooh. Well, that's very odd, because I was too. Let's go together, says Pooh, says he. Let's go together, says Pooh. What's 11, I said to Pooh.
12 what?
Said Pooh to me. I think it ought to be 22.
Just what I think myself, said Pooh.
It wasn't an easy sum to do, but that's what it is, said Pooh, said he. That's what it is, said Pooh.
Let's look for dragons, I said to Pooh.
Yes, let's, said Pooh to me. We crossed the river and found a few.
Yes, those are dragons, all right, said Pooh. As soon as I saw their beaks, I knew.
That's what they are, said Pooh, said he.
That's what they are, said Pooh.
Let's frighten the dragons, I said to Pooh.
That's right, said Pooh to me.
I'm not afraid, I said to Pooh, and I held his paw and I shouted, Shoo, silly old dragons! And off they flew.
I wasn't afraid, said Pooh, said he. I'm never afraid with you.
So wherever I am, there's always Pooh. There's always Pooh and me.
What would I do, I said to Pooh, if it wasn't for you?
And Pooh said, True, it isn't much fun for one, but two can stick together, says Pooh, says he.
That's how it is, says Pooh.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Baby stuff, you say? Teddy bears? Christopher Robin's just a little boy, but that Ricky Beatty's in sixth grade, and he still sleeps with his stuffed tiger? Well, let me tell you guys a story. The first time I taught a fantasy class at our university, we read Winnie the Pooh by A.A. Milne. And as you know, it's a book about Christopher Robin and his stuffed toys, Piglet, Eeyore, Kanga, Roo, Tigger, and the favorite, of course, that bear of little brain, Winnie the Pooh. The talk turned naturally enough to our own stuffed toys, which we'd loved as children. And one college girl admitted that she still had her teddy bear, and it was at school with her. At that, the others began to smile, even to laugh. And we discovered that almost all of these grown men and women still had their favorite stuffed toy in a closet or a drawer or sitting on the bed or being loved by one or all of their children. Or else there was a bitter memory of such a favorite toy being lost or destroyed. Such was the strength of the feeling in the class that we decided to have a teddy bear day. And a week later, everybody brought in a worn and battered animal, introduced it, told why it was loved, maybe recounted an adventure or two. It was a lovely and a loving time. Some of the animals had been traveled for, specially, or had been mailed from out of town, and of course, well insured. I brought in a magazine article with pictures of grown men and teddy bears, famous men who still had their teddy bears. And I suspect that a lot of famous women still have their teddy bears too, and most of us who aren't famous have theirs. Now I'll read you a story by a friend, Marion Levin, who right now has 4 fairly grown-up kids. I had a series of rubby noses, stuffed animals of every species. My all-time favorite was a monkey, but this particular night, my rubby nose was a small, brown, tummy-just-fits-my-hand teddy bear,
fuzzy, soft, and properly broken in. By that, I mean kneaded and squeezed and slept with and dragged about until all the newness had been worn off. His ear was the special body part responsible for his name. I would rub this ear back and forth under my nose, and so the name, Rubby Nose. I was 7. I had been taking dancing lessons for 2 years, and on this night, Mother, Dad, my Rubby Nose, and I were on our way to a local nightclub to perform a kitty cat dance for a private party of my dance teacher's personal friends. With Rubby securely in hand, I scrunched down on the car seat between my parents. I was already dressed in my much-loved costume, a black sateen bodysuit and hooded head complete with pointed ears, white mitts and paws, a huge white bow about my neck, and a tail which curled upward with the aid of a hidden wire inside its stuffing. I looked like Figaro, the cat Walt Disney had created for his movie Pinocchio. The night was threatening rain, but it hadn't started yet, and we drove along with our windows rolled down. When we pulled into the parking lot and came to a stop, Mother got out her right side, and Rubby and I scrooched under the wheel on the driver's side. Now, articles of security, comforting and precious to small children, are seldom looked upon the same way by parents. My dad took one measuring-up glance at Rubby. "Oh, no," he said, catching my arm. "Your Rubby Nose stays here." And with a gesture of finality, he tossed it through the open window to remain in the car. Well, I did my kitty cat dance, concentrating fixedly on the steps to block out what I thought was rather too much silliness on the part of the audience. They had surrounded me and were leaning precariously inward, jibing, "Here, kitty, 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 meow, meow," with very high-pitched voices. With a matter-of-factness that seems to be a special blessing of children, I finished the performance and we returned to the parking lot. A fine, drizzly rain was misting the air. As we drove home, the swish, click of the windshield wipers provided a gentle, mesmerizing accompaniment to my nodding head. My fingers searched out for the familiar frayed ear. They didn't find it. Rubby was gone. My tears were immediate. We were already halfway home, but my sobs crescendoed over my father's promise to get Rubby tomorrow. The car was turned about, and my breath came in more even gasps as we rode to the rescue. We pulled into the parking lot to see Rubby's woeful body, nose down, framed in the auto's headlights. After giving him a thorough shakedown, along with a few disgruntled mutterings, my father returned a soggy but intact Rubby to my impatient hands. We solved the mystery of Rubby's being in the puddle when he had been thrown into the car. My father's toss had been straight and true, and right through the other open window. Back in the car, with a sigh that settled my entire body, I fingered his special ear and rubbed it back and forth, under my nose. My head and the windshield wipers joined in rhythm, and soon I was asleep. "Yes," you say, "but it's about when she was 7. Ah, but why did she never forget and choose to write down that story when she was grown up? And then there's all those other books, either about stuffed toys or where stuffed toys are the actual characters. Winnie the Pooh is the most famous. I'm very fond of Ira Sleeps Over by Bernard Weber, and here's a couple bits from it. He's been invited to sleep over at a friend's, and his sister thinks of something. Older sister, of course. "But you never slept without your teddy bear before. How will you feel sleeping without your teddy bear for the very first time? I'll feel fine. I'll feel great. I'll probably love sleeping without my teddy bear. Just don't worry about it," I said. "Who's worried?" she said. But the story goes on, and he gets more and more worried. And the sister keeps on jibing him. "What if Reggie wants to know your teddy bear's name? Did you think about that? And did you think about how he will laugh and say Tata is a silly baby name even for a teddy bear? He won't ask, I said. He'll ask, she said. I decided not to take my teddy bear. See, all the way through the book, he first decides to and then decides not. Well, he finally doesn't take his teddy bear, and then he and his friend Reggie are in bed, and they're telling ghost stories, and here is what happens. Are you scared? Just a minute, said Reggie. I have to get something. What do you have to get? I asked. Oh, something, said Reggie. Reggie pulled the something out of a drawer. The room was dark, but I could see it had fuzzy arms and legs and was about the size of a teddy bear. I looked again. It was a teddy bear. Reggie got back into bed. Now, about this ghost, he said. Is that your teddy bear? I asked. What? Said Reggie. Is that your teddy bear? You mean this teddy bear? The one you're holding, I said. Uh-huh, Reggie answered. Do you sleep with him all of the time? What? Said Reggie. Do you sleep with him all of the time? Uh-huh. Does your teddy bear have a name? Does your teddy bear have a name? I said louder. Uh-huh, Reggie answered. What is it? You won't laugh, said Reggie. No, I won't laugh, I said. Promise? I promise. It's Fufu. Did you say Fufu? Uh-huh, said Reggie. Just a minute, I said. I have to get something. What do you have to get? Reggie asked. Oh, something, I answered. And so Ira runs home next door and gets his teddy bear and brings it back and finds that his friend is already asleep with his teddy bear. Then there's The Teddy Bear Habit by a man named Collier, and this is about a somewhat older boy. He's 12 or 13, and he is working in television, playing guitar and getting jobs around New York as a child actor. And he's so attached to his teddy bear that he can't play unless the teddy bear is with him. And he carries it around in a paper bag so that people will think it's his lunch and not his teddy bear. The teddy bear has become a real security item, and that's a book that you ought to read. We have this love of animals, stuffed animals, in my own family. When I was little, my sisters and my brother and I cut open all our stuffed animals and sewed in candy hearts, the sort you get at Valentine's Day that say, I love you, on them. And we also drew their portraits, lined them up, and did each one in pastels or crayons. We played out elaborate stories, moving them about as characters, and then we wrote down these stories using the various animals as the characters. And my own kids, well, Elspeth's favorite is Squeaky Black Spot. Jillian's is Babu and Squeaky Bear, but I think Squeaky Bear's been lost. Megan still has Pink Doggy, who never had more of a name than that. And Demi, her favorite was Rolfie, and there's a story to Rolfie. He was a green velvet dachshund with a gold satin underside, and the satin became very worn out, and I replaced it with some yellow satin because I couldn't find gold, and it was a very hard job sewing it all on the tummy and the legs and so forth. And Rolfie went everywhere with Demi. Once she left him on a bench outside of a Cleveland department store, and we telephoned long distance, and they packaged Rolfie up and sent him back to us. This is the problem, you see, with the favorite. The favorite always gets lost because you carry him everywhere. And Rolfie did eventually disappear, and we didn't know where he was, and we've never seen him since. But recently, Demi came home from college for a weekend, and she told this story. She'd been driving with a friend in the dark at night, and in the headlights, she saw something on the edge of the road. She thought for a moment it was a dead animal, but as she passed it, she saw that it was a stuffed animal, and in a quick glimpse, it looked like Rolfie. She said she had a terrible feeling. She said, "For several seconds, I sat there stunned, and I felt like Mole when he was smelling his old home and went past it and began to cry. I don't know why at 21 I was still suffering about that little creature, but I asked Sarah to stop, and we turned around and drove back, and I picked it up." And at that point, she showed it to me, and she said with a little smile, "You know, it does look a little like Rolfie." And it was a battered, dirty, green dog, too. And that relative of Rolfie now has an honored place in our menagerie. Another thing we do is rotate our animals. Elspeth feels that none of them should have their feelings hurt. And so after a while, she will move one set of stuffed animals back into the toy chest and bring out another set of stuffed animals so that they will have their turn at being loved. I've written a sort of poem about Elspeth's collection. This was when she decided several years ago that she was going to sleep with me for a while. I sleep in a king-sized bed. Beside me is Squeaky Black Spot, and then Bear, and then Monster Monkey, and then Clyde Xavier, and then Francis William, and then Damaris Vera, and then Jonathan, and then Sleepy Baby, known as Timothy, and finally Elspeth, age 8. Ugo, child psychiatrist, says, "You had better not sleep with Elspeth. It will make her too dependent. Heck, I'm the one who needs security." You don't need any more convincing, do you? You didn't really from the start. Why don't you have a stuffed animal day in your class? There's lots you could do. You could bring in your favorite. Tell about him. Are there any hers? Are stuffed animals, are teddy bears always he's? Write down a story or poem about your animal. Or about the one who got lost, who got thrown out, carried away by the dog. You could make up a pretend story. You could draw their portraits or do one long group portrait for the wall of everyone's stuffed animal. You could put on a program for your animals. You could give them a party. Make up a stuffed animal song. Create a stuffed animal dance. What are your ideas? Write and let us know, for this is such an important matter. You know why, and I do too. But let me read a little bit more. First from A.A. Milne's introduction to the Christopher Robin storybook, then from The Velveteen Rabbit by Marjorie Bianca. Here's A.A. Milne. Like most little boys, Christopher Robin has had toy animals to play with, many toy animals to play with. But though he loves them all, his best friend has been his teddy bear called Winnie the Pooh, or Pooh for short. The funny thing is that Pooh doesn't like being called a teddy bear now, and if anybody says to Christopher Robin, "Is that your teddy bear?" Christopher Robin says very coldly, "No, it's Pooh." And then he and Pooh go off whispering together. You see, what they both feel, and what I feel too, is that Pooh is really alive and does things, but a teddy bear is just a toy which sits about and does nothing. And we feel that anybody who could see Pooh, if only for a moment, and not know at once that he was alive, must be a very silly person. And from The Velveteen Rabbit, "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you are made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." So that's the secret. And we understand, don't we?
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.